Hello, this is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated November 30th, 2018. We'll start today's reading on the front page with Farm Bill, deal sealed in principle. GOP loses fight to expand food stamp work requirements. Bloomington, a deal on a new federal farm bill has been reached in principle, members of Congress said Thursday, after House Republicans dropped some proposed changes, including expanded work requirements for food benefits. We are working to finalize legal and report language as well as CBO, Congressional Budget Office, scores, but we still have more work to do, said House Agriculture Committee Chairman Mike Conaway, Republican of Texas, and other members in a statement. We are committed to delivering a new farm bill to America as quickly as possible, he said. The nonpartisan CBO is tasked with producing independent analysis of the budgetary impact of legislation. The GOP concessions likely will help draw Democratic votes to the compromise bill in the House next week. Even if they lose some conservative Republicans, Democrats indicated support would be more bipartisan and follow similar numbers on past farm bills, which tend to pass comfortably. The farm bill will reauthorize the nation's nearly $9 billion in food and agriculture programs for another 5 years. That includes the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, formerly known as food stamps, which helps low-income families pay for food. The bill also deals with crop insurance, a program that protects farmers against financial losses due to disasters and droughts. Nutrition represented nearly 80% of outlays in the 2014 Farm Bill. Illinois Farm Bureau President Richard Gubert Jr. said that he was encouraged by the news. Farmers need certainty in these challenging times, he said in a statement, adding, the farm bill is an important piece of legislation on which farmers and consumers alike depend. We look forward to reviewing the bill's provisions and urge quick consideration. U.S. Representative Rodney Davis, a Taylorville Republican who serves on the conference committee charged with working out the differences between the House and Senate versions, previously said that the deal was similar to the most recent farm bill that expired September 30th. This is a very good sign that we'll get a farm bill signed into law before the end of the year, Davis said. I'm continuing to work with my colleagues to finalize the details to ensure the priorities of Illinois farmers are included in the final bill. Davis said that he's disappointed that SNAP reforms and workforce training investments will not be included. The GOP wanted the work rules to expand to apply to able-bodied adults up to age 59 and people with young dependent children. But there are a lot of good policies for our farmers included in this bill, and it's critical that we pass those for agriculture, he said. I will continue to work to help to get people out of poverty and fill jobs that are open. U.S. Senator Pat Roberts, Republican of Kansas, the lead negotiator for the Senate, was vague about the specific provisions in the compromise, but indicated the bill would be closer to the Senate's plan for SNAP. The Senate plan included incentives for states to expand work training programs and added new accountability measures. It's more comprehensive and focuses on program integrity, Roberts said. Republicans also dropped a rule change that would expedite forest thinning projects, which environmental groups said would be ineffective against fires. The bill will include a provision that makes it legal for farmers to grow and market industrial hemp, Roberts confirmed. We're not talking about cannabis, he said. Like many lawmakers, U.S. Representative Darren LaHood, a Dunlap Republican, said he was hopeful but would wait for the final version before discussing specifics. A strong and vibrant agriculture community is essential to the success of Central and West Central Illinois, and I'm encouraged that the progress made between the House and Senate thus far will lead to a strong farm bill for the years ahead, he said in a statement. Senators from both parties indicated the final bill would widely resemble the Senate version of the bill rather than the House version, which passed without a single Democratic vote. The Senate requires at least 60 votes to pass the bill, which means the 51 Republican senators need Democratic support to pass it, unlike in the House, where Republicans currently have a majority. "It is good news that we are getting closer," said Adam Nielsen, Director of National Legislation for the Bloomington-based IFB. America's Gold Star Families, Honoring Our Fallen Heroes. Decatur loved ones find comfort with special Christmas tree. When she was 12 years old, Marlene Van Meter lost her brother Michael Flood in the Vietnam War. He was killed on Good Friday, April 4, 1969, at a time when veterans often did not receive the honors they do today. But while nearly 50 years have passed, Van Meter believes it is not too late to recognize her brother's service. "It is difficult to go through," she said. "It takes a lot of healing." On Thursday, she honored his memory and the sacrifices of many others by attending the Fallen Heroes Tree of Honor Christmas Tree Ornament Ceremony at the Decatur Civic Center, where the decorated tree will be displayed in the lobby until January. Its 256 ornaments represent fallen veterans in 40 states. The event was sponsored by the America's Gold Star Families, a national organization that focuses on helping families who have experienced a loss in the military. It also provides outreach services that include scholarships and a birthday card program for children of fallen veterans. "It's our mission for the organization to provide honor, hope, and healing to those grieving any military loss," said Patty Smith, president of the organization. "Oftentimes, Gold Star families want to do something, and this is it. This is the first year for the tree in Decatur. Though the organization has created similar displays at the Riverfront Museum in Peoria and the Central Illinois Regional Airport in Bloomington," Smith said that all three trees will have the same ornaments. Smith said that effort to extend the tree project in Decatur came about through the efforts of Sid and Teresa Palmer, whose son, Logan Palmer, was a Navy sailor who was killed when his ship collided with an oil tanker near Singapore on August 21, 2017. Logan Palmer was a 23-year-old Sangamon Valley High School graduate and an interior communications electrician on the USS McCain, a guided missile destroyer. The fatal collision left 10 U.S. soldiers dead and 5 injured. Logan Palmer's body was found 6 days later. "The tree is not just for those who died in battle," Teresa Palmer said during a ceremony introducing the tree at the Civic Center. "We have many who are coming back injured." Beyond the physical ailment, she said, veterans also face other struggles when they come home. 22 of our military men and women come home every single day and kill themselves because of what they have to carry," she said. "They are not always represented." Other guest speakers at the ceremony included State Representative Dan Calkins, a Decatur Republican, and Lieutenant Commander Randall Malloy, commanding officer of the Navy Operational Support Center, Decatur. 6 family members were invited to hang ornaments for their loved ones on the tree, with the rest of the audience soon following suit. Van Meter's brother's name is on one of the stars. "At the time my brother died in the Vietnam era, you couldn't speak about it at all. There was so much hatred in this nation," she said. "We were not able to speak about it like these people are today. They have a lot more help, but this is healing," she said. And the pictures show Gold Star family member Donald Pannier left, bows his head as a prayer is spoken during the inaugural Fallen Heroes Tree of Honor dedication at the Decatur Civic Center Thursday morning. Pannier's son, Sergeant Philip J. Pannier, died from combat wounds suffered in Iraq in 2008. There are more photos at the Herald.review. Also, there's a picture of Gold Star family members, including Marlene Van Meter, middle in the selecting ornaments, memorializing fallen military members to be placed on the tree during the inaugural Fallen Heroes Tree of Honor dedication Thursday morning. And the front page picture shows Madison Palmer, sister of Logan Palmer, and Adam Tucker, cousin of Logan Palmer, placing ornaments memorializing fallen military members on the tree during the inaugural Fallen Heroes Tree of Honor dedication at the Civic Center on Thursday morning. Ornament information: to register a fallen veteran for Fallen Heroes Tree of Honor ornament, visit www.americasgoldstarfamilies.org. Again, that's www.americasgoldstarfamilies.org. Community news: Toys for Tats makes mark on the holiday. Artists gather gifts for annual Spirit of Giving Drive today in Decatur. Doug Tuttle was one of the many patrons who turned Oakwood Tattoo into a place to be Thursday during its fourth annual Toys for Tats drive. The event, which ran from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. at the 139 South Oakland Avenue Tattoo Shop, asked participants to bring new and unwrapped children's toys with a value of $25 or more in exchange for a free tattoo from a list of pre-designed offerings. The toys will be donated to the WAND Spirit of Giving Toy Drive today. As he stood outside of his shop intending to get a duck tattoo, Tuttle said he was unfazed by the lengthy wait times. It meant that people were eagerly showing up to donate, he said, and those donations will ultimately go toward a good cause. Even if your kid's taken care of, everywhere else, parents and guardians might not have that extra money for a toy, Tuttle said. It's a good program. Andrea Hirsch, who works in the front desk at Oakwood Tattoo, said Toys for Tats has grown from a humble toy drive into an event that pulls in hundreds of people from around the area to participate. Last year, the event collected about $10,000 in toys and gave out about 197 tattoos, she said. The tattoos are pre-designed and Christmas-themed. We've had other people who have taken our idea and started it in their communities, Hirsch said. If something like that can happen, you know it's a good thing. Hirsch said that to meet the influx of people who waited for tattoos, Toys for Tats typically enlists the help of guest tattoo artists to join Oakwood's staff for the day. The guest artists come from around the country and farther and volunteer their talent, she said. The more the word gets out about what we're doing, the more artists want to get involved, Hirsch said. We started out with the four shop guys and two guest artists, but now we've got the four shop guys and 20 guest artists, she said. Matt Thornton, a tattoo artist based in St. Louis, has volunteered as a guest artist for all 4 years of Toys for Tats. He is a friend with the Oakwood artists and likes to visit Decatur when he can, but he said particularly makes time to lend his time and talent toward the toy drive because of the joy that comes with giving a Christmas gift to a child. During Christmas time, it's good to help, Thornton said. A lot of tattooers have kids and know that. Unfortunately, there are a lot of people who can't afford Christmas. Nicholas Green came from Newcastle, Australia, roughly 9,081 miles away from Decatur, to be a guest artist for this year's event. To say that it's a long trip is an understatement, said Green, and acknowledges that plane tickets for flights overseas are typically costly. But he said none of that really matters to him when it comes to Toys for Tats. You go where you're needed, Green said. It's just distance. It's going to take me a week. Take me a week out of my time to come here and hang out with my friends and give to these kids that need these presents. It's nothing, he said. Clergy abuse allegations, former Decatur priests named, Springfield. A list released Thursday by the Diocese of Springfield with the names of 19 priests accused of sexually abusing children includes at least six clergy who worked in Decatur at times. The disclosure was in response to a review by the State Attorney General's office, which since August has been investigating the Roman Catholic Church after a Pennsylvania grand jury report identified at least seven priests with connection to Illinois. Springfield Diocese spokeswoman Marlene Mulford on Thursday declined a Herald and Review request to disclose where each of the 19 worked, but a review of the public documents and newspaper clips show those with Decatur ties are Garrett Neal D., who worked at Holy Family Catholic Church in Decatur in 1971, according to a Springfield State Journal Register article in 2002. He left his parish in Texas after acknowledging that he had sexually abused children while in the Catholic Diocese of Springfield years ago. Walter Wiertz, ordained in 1960 with positions in Godfrey, Granite City, and Decatur, according to a 2003 State Journal Register story. The diocese listed him as having been removed from the ministry. Eugene Costa, a priest who formerly served at Holy Family Parish from 1987 to 1993, he was severely beaten in a Springfield park in December 2004 by two young men after he allegedly propositioned them for sex, according to the report. He was also removed from his ministry. Also on the list are three priests who have died. Robert Eager, who was at St. Patrick Church in the 1930s, Frank Westhoff, also at St. Patrick in the 1960s, and Ray Franzen, the first pastor of Holy Family Church from 1959 to 87. The list does not detail when the alleged incidents occurred. 12 clergy on the list are dead. The diocese said that the list was determined by a review board in place since 2002, composed of predominantly lay people with professional backgrounds in areas such as state and local law enforcement, criminal and civil law, education, and psychology. Any single case of abuse is one too many, Bishop Thomas John Paprocki said in a statement. But this review has shown the positive impact of a zero-tolerance approach, and we are committed to sustain these efforts with heightened vigilance. The 129 parish diocese covers 28 central Illinois counties and has 145,000 Catholics. The Archdiocese of Chicago also added 10 new names to its list of clergy accused of child sex abuse on Thursday, as did officials in Peoria and Rockford. The Pennsylvania grand jury reported detailed decades of abuse and cover-up, alleging more than 1,000 children had been abused over the years by about 300 priests. Since then, a federal prosecutor in Philadelphia has begun working on a federal criminal case centered on child exploitation, and attorneys general in at least 11 other states have launched investigations. Attorney General Lisa Madigan said her office has met with all six Illinois dioceses and are looking through files. Our initial review has found the number of Catholic clergy in Illinois with credible allegations of sexual abuse against minors is more extensive than the church previously has disclosed to the public, she said. Madigan's office said they anticipate more names will be disclosed. My investigation will continue in order to provide victims, parishioners, and the public with complete and accurate accounting of sexually abusive behavior with minors involving priests in Illinois, she said. Three priests in the Peoria area, George Highland, Dwayne Leclerc, and John Underco, also are accused of engaging in sexual misconduct with minors. Several Roman Catholic bishops, including Paprocki, earlier this month, urged colleagues at a U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops meeting to take some sort of action on the clergy sex abuse crisis, despite a Vatican order to delay voting on key proposals. Paprocki suggested a non-binding vote to convey a sense of the bishop's aspirations regarding anti-abuse efforts. We are not branch managers of the Vatican, he said. Our people are crying out for some action. The Vatican has ordered a global meeting on sex abuse in February. The other priests on the Springfield list are Alvin Campbell, Robert Dodd, Michael Driscoll, George Fowler, George Kromenaker, Joseph C. O'Brien, Frank O'Hara, Daniel Ryan, and Aloysius Swellenbach, who are dead. Joseph Cernick and Joseph Harvey, who are listed as laicized or having been removed from ministry, and Robert DeGrand and Francis Tebengura, listed as being no longer with the church. In more local and state news on page A3, sex predator gets 25 years in prison. A convicted Decatur sexual predator who prosecutors said used his status as a father figure to prey on two girls under the age of 13 was sentenced to a total of 25 years in prison Thursday. Wesley A. Tyson, 41, appeared in custody in Macon County Circuit Court and pleaded guilty to one count of predatory criminal sexual assault, a Class X felony. Judge Thomas Griffith sentenced him to 22 years on that offense and added on a 3-year sentence to be served consecutively, after Tyson also pleaded guilty to one count of aggravated criminal sexual abuse to a girl under 13, a Class 2 felony. The sentencing was part of a plea deal negotiated by Tyson's former public defender, Timothy Tighe, that saw Griffith dismiss 12 additional charges of predatory criminal sexual assault and 10 charges of aggravated criminal sexual abuse. One count of child pornography was also dismissed. Tyson pleaded guilty at a hearing September 25th when Assistant State's Attorney Kate Kurtz had described how Tyson had come into contact with his victims through his relationship with an adult woman. The original total of 25 charges had covered time span between November 2010 and January this year. Before the sentence was announced, Griffith heard victim impact statements describing the emotional trauma and sexual assaults had inflicted on the families involved. A mother of the victims told the court, "I don't understand why he would want to hurt the kids. I feel so devastated he could do such a horrible thing to the kids." Victim advocate Todd Tuggle read several statements on behalf of the girl victims. One child described how she struggled with bad dreams after the abuse and how her behavior had changed. "I am mean to my mom and my sisters. I cuss them out, and I like to tear up my neighbor's mail because it makes me feel better. I like to get into fights." Another girl said that she lost trust in Tyson, whom she had seen as a father figure. "I feel like I have no dad because my real dad don't come around. It makes me sad." In addition to the prison sentences, Tyson was ordered to register as a sexual predator for life. Tyson was represented at Thursday's hearing by Chief Public Defender David Ellison, who took over for Tighe, who is no longer with the Public Defender's Office. The Blue Moon Circle, complex honoring 308 years of living. City also gives lauded centenarians a medallion, Decatur. Three women were honored Thursday with the City of Decatur medallion, part of their induction into a special club at their senior living complex. Randall residents of Decatur, 1415 West Mound Road, recently started the Blue Moon Circle to recognize its residents who have reached their 100th birthday, something that happens once in a blue moon. Inductees Helen Balos, 102, Anna Jones, 103, and Irene Overstreet, 103, were each treated to a special lunch with their families, pampering, and a photo shoot. On Thursday, Macon Julie Moore Wolf, I think it's supposed to be Mayor Julie Moore Wolf, presented Jones and Balos with their medallions at a reception. Overstreet was unable to attend, but was acknowledged and will be given the medallion, organizers said. And the picture shows Decatur Mayor Julie Moore Wolf presents Helen Balos, 102, and Anna Jones, 103, with City of Decatur medallions in honor of their induction into the Blue Moon Circle, a club at Randall Residence of Decatur. The women were recognized for having reached their 100th birthdays. And then there's a close-up, or a picture of close-up, that of the medallion that says, "100 Blue Moon Circle member Helen Balos. This happens once in a blue moon." Police seek help with death investigation. Andrea L. Browning found outside of Lincoln home Saturday. The Lincoln Police Department is asking for help from the public as it investigates the death of a woman found outdoors Saturday night. Police said officers were called at 10:42 p.m. to the 900th block of 8th Street on the report of an unresponsive woman outside a residence. Andrea L. Browning, 39, was pronounced dead at the scene by Logan County Coroner Robert Thomas. Autopsy reports are pending, he said Thursday, but the preliminary findings show she died from hypothermia. According to records from the National Weather Service in Lincoln, the temperature at that time would have been about 40 degrees. Police said the woman did not reside at the immediate vicinity, but have declined to give further details. Police were assisted by the Illinois State Police and the Logan County Sheriff's Office in securing and processing of scene and collecting evidence. Anyone with any information concerning the investigation is asked to call Crime Stoppers at 217-732-3000. Again, that's 732-3000. Information is kept confidential and you may remain anonymous if your information leads to the arrest of a person or persons involved in a crime. Crime Stoppers may pay a cash reward of up to $1,000. No charges filed in candy tampering. This is from the State Journal Register. Sherman. No charges have been filed in the case of a thin piece of metal found in a piece of candy in Sherman last month. Sherman police previously said an adult and a juvenile were identified as people of interest in the case. On Wednesday, police said the adult was determined to not be directly involved in the incident. As for the juvenile, police have talked to the Sangamon County State's Attorney's Office about potential charges. At this time, no formal charges have been filed, a news release said. The Sherman candy case began Halloween night with a report from a rural Sherman resident. The female resident supposedly found the piece of metal inside a wrapped single-serving size package of Reese's stuffed with pieces. Mayor Trevor Klatfelter said police were called to the rural Sherman home the night of October 31st after the occupant opened the Reese's wrapper and found the metal stuck in the chocolate. The resident, who wasn't named, told police the candy was collected during the door-to-door trick-or-treating by the resident's 8-year-old granddaughter in Sherman on Halloween, Klatfelter said. Village officials said that at the time the grandmother told police the package's wrapper didn't appear to be tampered with before it was torn open. No one was hurt. Based on initial information, village officials thought the metal came from manufacturing equipment at the Hershey's plant. Officials made no arrangements with Hershey's to send in the candy to investigate that premise. On November 10th, Sherman police issued an update saying they continued their investigation into the incident by buying several packages of disposable razors from a local retail store and taking the razors apart. The metal object in the candy matched one of the razor parts, officials said. Additional interviews with people led to police identifying the people of interest. One light to remember. There's a picture of a Milken University junior, Heidi Bush, sings holiday carol songs with other members of the Milken a cappella choir as guests arrive before the One Light to Remember ceremony to commemorate and honor loved ones at Decatur Memorial Hospital. The event also featured the Presbyterian Church Bells on Wheels handbell choir and the Milken University's Children's Choir. And Heidi Bush is wearing a headband with antlers. That's all we have time for the first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated November 30th, 2018. This is Barbara Ridenour. Please stay tuned.